It's 4:06, and you're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Gene Purcell, filling in today for Veronica Ricker.
And I'm Rob Ferretz. Today on the show, we're hearing from the two Democratic candidates running to become the state's next lieutenant governor. They face off in a primary election next week. The winner will go on to face Republican Rebecca Clayfish, who doesn't face a primary opponent. Before the news, we talked with State Senator John Lehman. With us now is Mary Jo Walters. She's a political activist and a Democratic candidate for lieutenant governor. She joins us from our studio in Eau Claire. Mary Jo Walters, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you very much for having me.
So, start off, why are you running for lieutenant governor of Wisconsin?
Aren't you supposed to ask me why am I in Eau Claire?
We'll get to that in a bit. But make the case, sir, why am I running for
lieutenant governor? I should be able to answer this because I've been running for lieutenant governor since March. I'm running for lieutenant governor because no one else was. There was only one candidate running. And at the time, before I decided to become a candidate for lieutenant governor, I was actually running for governor. And at that point, I was running against Scott Walker and Mary Burke. And it was becoming contentious, in a way that it was divisive within the communities that I'm a part of, because we still have that divide of people who are supporting Mary Burke and those that are not, but are all against Scott Walker. And so I decided, after talking to my mom and another friend, to run for lieutenant governor because there was only one person, John Lehman, running.
Well, tell us some about your background and what led you into politics.
I was a class officer in ninth grade, which is not something I take lightly. I had to decide to run for office and then solicit votes and then win. And the reason I did that was because I wanted to have some changes within my junior high school that were not happening, more social activities and things like that. And I was able to do that. And then when I was in high school, I also ran for vice president of my class. And again, I was able to organize events and help with the graduation. I decided politics for me didn't really sort of take off until after I occupied the Capitol for 3 weeks straight. And it was at that point that I sort of saw a disconnect with the people that were protesting and the people that were in office. And I realized then, this is interesting. Why aren't there more activists running for office? And then Chris Taylor, who is in my neighborhood where I live on the east side of Madison, she came out of that energy out of the Capitol and she ran. And also Lori Compass, she stepped up and tried to run against one of the Fitzgerald brothers. And so there was this sort of peak moment of activism in the area. And I sort of was feeding off that. And I also was a part of the Occupy movement. And all that politicization of around issues in and around our state capitol, just really, well, that was just fuel for me.
And what was it about Act 10 that led you to get involved in occupying the capitol and then beyond that into politics?
Act 10 disrupted my child's schooling in that his teachers didn't go to school one day. And neither did the office workers in the school. And so we proceeded to join them at the Capitol. I wanted my son to see where his teacher was. And I continued to go back to the Capitol. And so what I learned was that not everybody was there at the Capitol. There were a lot of people who were not coming and protesting. And so I was with a small group of people holding a family space that those people had set up. But I was a space holder. And that was a motto that I just continued to say, not everyone is here. Not everyone is comfortable coming through, especially after the Capitol started closing down and having a strong police presence. And so I continued to realize at that point it wasn't just about the teachers, even though they galvanized us to the space and they sacrificed quite a bit. It was also they were coming after our health care. They were coming after women's rights. They were coming after the environment. And so I just never left the Capitol after February of 2011.
You mentioned that you're based in Madison. You're in Eau Claire now. You're actually on a bike tour of the state, I understand. Can you talk about how you've been trying to get your name out there on the road?
Um, I it's kind of fun. I decided to be the Mary on a bike that people want. You know, when you travel by bike, you're, first of all, you're going to see things, of course, that you wouldn't see by car. You know, if you walked, you'd see even more. As I biked from Madison to Eau Claire County, I finished yesterday, actually, the ride. I flyered along the way. I've been flyering consistently since I started gathering my signatures back in April. I gathered almost 1,900 signatures by myself to get on the ballot. I had one person, Dave Peters, help me. But anyway, I continue to just do that, which is flyering as I meet people and letting them know there's an election. My campaign, which is also similar to other people's campaigns that are unrecognized by the larger media, we are actually a galvanizing force around talking about participating in voting before the November election. And so that's what I've been doing. I've been meeting a lot of people in gas stations and stopping in at libraries and restaurants, of course, along the way.
And you're running kind of a bare bones campaign financially. That plays into another issue you've talked about, some getting money out of politics. What do you want to see change when it comes to money in politics?
Well, as far as the money goes, I mean, to be realistic, you do need money. I actually spent $800 up until July. So that's from January till July. And to the people that don't have money, the homeless people thought that I spent too much. And I actually thought I did, too. Like $500 probably would have been fine. But when you start to travel by car, you have gas expenses, food, of course, and printing. I spend a lot of money on printing my flyers. I don't have any staff, but those are my main costs, like gas and printing. Anyway, money out of politics means maybe we need more public forums, access to public airways, access to newspapers. I want the move to amend people who are arguing at the federal level and organizing locally to organize candidate forums, because the more you learn that the Koch brothers will be backing candidates, when you call those candidates into a room with the other Koch-supported Koch brothers and whomever money-supported candidates, you put them all in the room together and you have the public surrounding them and questioning them, you're going to have a much more transparent process. And that's what I'm talking about with money out of politics.
You're running as a Democrat. The Democratic Party of Wisconsin doesn't have your name on the webpage as a candidate, only John Lehman's. What is your relationship with the Democratic Party?
Well, you know, it's hurtful, I have to say. It's very hurtful on my end. I'm not sure if it's hurtful on their end. I don't know why they insisted on pre-endorsing John Lehman and Mary Burke back in April before we even had ballot access. I mean Brett Hulsey, but the treatment that I'm receiving from the larger party committee is no different than many candidates that are outside of the chosen few that are selected in the party politics. And I'm not so sure what they're afraid of, but I just moved on. You know what I mean? Like I was pulled from their website. I was on their website. I was pulled from the website. It does hurt me to be blacklisted and not known. I have to try, you know, three times as hard to get my name out there. But more than that, it damages the party because it is an open primary. And Robert La Follette fought for that. And why would you close it down? And I'm going to say this because I'm getting very angry talking about it. I'm going to say this to the Democratic Party and I'm going to say this to the Republican Party. You know, I'm running for an election right now. And when Tuesday's done, I will proceed on many levels to get rid of the primary in this state or at least revamp it. Because if you want to run your primaries, do it in your convention, but don't make the taxpayers pay for this. And then tell people to go vote in November. And so I'm going to finish out. What happens is not only did the state DPW or whatever the initials of DPW, anyway, what it is, they told the county levels, don't work with her. Don't invite her in. She can't come speak at your county events. And they shut me out. And what happens is today I check the Chippewa. I'm in Chippewa County. And I check their website to see what their hours were today. And my name's not listed. I also tabled at the Columbia County Democratic table. My name was not listed. They're lying to people of Wisconsin. They're lying to them. And when they say that there's not another candidate, we're talking about two candidates. It's a primary.
We're talking with Democratic Lieutenant Governor candidate Mary Jo Walters. You can join the conversation at 800-642-1234. Do you have a question for the candidate, wondering where she stands on a particular issue? 800-642-1234 is the number to call. You can also post on the Central Time Facebook page. You're listening to Central Time. Rob Ferret here with Jean Purcell, talking with Democratic Lieutenant Governor candidate Mary Jo Walters. She's one of two Democratic candidates on the ballot in next week's primary election for the office. If you have a question for Mary Jo Walters, wondering where she stands on a certain issue, you can call in now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Central Time Facebook page. I wanted to get into a couple of particular issues with you. First of all, you've talked some about a minimum wage during the campaign. What would you like to see change?
Well, with the minimum wage, there are different organizations that are asking for a 10-10 increase in the minimum wage. And then there are others that are asking for a $15 an hour wage. And they're actually coming together on that, meaning like with Seattle, eventually working up to the 15 an hour, but starting at the 10-10. I think that's a good solution. I also strongly fought for keeping the current wage that's in Milwaukee County and Madison County. And on many issues, I think that where you can't find the solution at the state level, you might want to just start at the local level.
If you were elected as lieutenant governor, you would be elected as a Democrat, likely working with a Republican legislature. Do you think you'd be able to work with them to try to negotiate an increase in the minimum wage?
I'm not sure. There's like 300 some candidates right now. I have no idea their whereabouts in terms of on this issue. I guess what we could do is, well, the first thing, of course, would be sort of see if there's an existing, I know the Democrats have proposed a 10-10 law, so I would have to start there and see which Republicans signed on to that. I think that would be a starting point.
We'll go to our callers now at 800-642-1234. We have Philip on the line in Fish Creek. Philip, hi.
Hello.
What did you want to ask about, Philip?
I was just curious what her stance would be on Native American rights in the state of Wisconsin.
Can you be more specific?
Vis-a-vis gaming, education, and any other issues that have to deal with reservations.
Oh, so specific to the reservation, what I as a state officer would think or help with, or is that what you mean?
Yes.
Well, I think that, you know, the different tribes have their own governance, and I think that our state would, of course, have to have discussions in and around different issues. I'm not clear on education. Are you thinking about funding? I'm sorry, that's just not something I have thought about.
All right, looks like we've lost.
He's gone.
Yep,
okay, well,
Philip.
I guess I could just blather on.
Well, actually, a related issue that I was hoping to get into is the iron mine in northern Wisconsin. I think that is an issue you've talked some about.
I've not only talked about it, I've screamed about it. I'm opposed to the iron ore mine for sure, and I'm not going to waver on that like Mary Burke did. You know, the thing that really frustrates me is that why can Mary Burke get away with that? How does she, as a gubernatorial candidate, not make a stance on the mine? I mean, I'm against it. I will tell you that. It's a sensitive area. It should be a national park, the Pinoki Mines area. The Pinoki Mines is a bad idea. And so I support the Bad River Tribe as they continue at the federal level to fight that mine. And I don't agree with John Layman that it's just going to be the Army Corps that's going to stop it.
In a similar vein, we've seen a boom in frac sand mining in Wisconsin, especially the western part of the state. Would you pursue more regulation on that industry?
I this is another issue and why I went on the bike ride. The reason I took my bike through and across the Driftless area and then now into Eau Claire County is to actually see the frac sand mines up close, because when I'm in Madison, I'm just hearing about them. And I've seen movies, but I've never seen them up close. Regulation is all we have right now. And there are no air quality standards at the federal level that then the DNR can use. There are local groups that are going to have to start to do this and pay for it themselves. Silica dust is in and around these mines, transporting into people's homes and into their lungs. And so I'm not afraid to say I think there should be a moratorium that shuts these mines down until more studies are done. And probably you can have that last a while, because what's happening is, yes, there's job creation, but there's also at a cost, too high a cost, and that's the health cost of those workers and those that live around in the environment itself.
We'll go back to our callers now. We've got Andy on the line in Madison. Andy, hi. You're on the air.
I had a question. I'd like to know a little bit more about what your policy or what your position would be on corporate taxation and taxation on smaller businesses. I think there was a caller that called in earlier, Cudahy, that was giving Mr. Layman a hard time about this issue. And, I see Governor Walker's policy benefiting large corporations but not doing much for small businesses as far as tax breaks and things like that. So I'm curious how you stand on those issues.
Andy, thanks for the call. So taxation, especially as it affects small businesses versus larger corporations, he's asking.
I was on the road, of course, this whole week, and so I've had many discussions about many issues, and this did come up. One person was talking about taxations in terms of that definition of what a small business is. A lot of times, a small business is numbered at 500 employees or less. And so what that person was saying, which I would agree with, especially when I'm in these smaller areas, is that maybe, we should have sort of a scale that sort of moderates what number we're talking about here, because small business could be five or less. And so I know that a lot of people that were relating this issue to I'm going to go back to the tribal gaming, which is that, basically you exist on this land and you have this gaming happening or you have this business happening, and the state then says you are taxed for that. And so what I've heard in terms of the gaming is that the gaming brings in business for the surrounding area. And so maybe there should be a different tax rate for that in consideration of that, not just fully taking the money from the gaming at a flat rate, but considering how much money is also brought into the community because of it. I would probably say that would be true for small businesses.
Andy, thanks for the call. Running a little low on time, but Leslie in Amberg is on the line and wonders about your stance on marijuana legalization.
I am pro legalization of marijuana. As a lieutenant governor, I mean, if there's one thing I'd really like to start out with would be to help Melissa Sargent's efforts and to just go ahead and start a task force looking at the legalization of marijuana in terms of dispensaries, the taxation, and the regulation of it, because a lot of people are leaving the state because they cannot get their medicine.
Any other, just a little time left, any other key social issues you'd fight for in Wisconsin outside of economic things like minimum wage and mining?
Something we didn't talk about was affordable housing. I'm coming out of the Occupy movement, and I myself am having a difficult time finding housing in Madison. And I think that we should most certainly, definitely have a task force about housing, because a lot of effort over the last 4 years was put toward, not toward tenant rights, but more toward realtors and landlords. And in Madison, it's pretty skyrocketing in terms of the cost of living there and of her rentals. So I would like to do a survey of what we have available and start talking about some affordable housing projects statewide. We have not done this in decades.
Mary Jo, that's all the time we have. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Yeah, I had a good time. I'm nervous. Thank you.
Thanks a lot. That's Mary Jo Walters. She's a Democratic candidate for lieutenant governor. Her primary opponent is John Lehman. We talked to him earlier in the show. If you missed any of this week's candidate forums, or you want to hear them again, or check out a whole lot of information about the primary election next Tuesday, you can head on over to wisconsinvote.org.
I'm Gene Purcell, filling in today for Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.